Hello.
Welcome to On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Smolski, joined by the keyboard maven himself, Nick Pollock. Nick, how are you doing?
Good. I never know, Eric, if you're going to say, Nick, how you doing? You say the thing. I'm like, do I say it now?
Honestly, your screen froze up on me a little bit. And so I couldn't read your facial expression.
Never. Just assume it's a smile.
Yeah.
And with vast anticipation for what you're going to do next.
Just always. You're always got to smile.
Got to do that. Hey, guys. Yeah. We have another podcast this week. We have another update to the list. It's fun. I'm doing something now where I speed run writing the notes. I don't know if you know this, where if I do it under an hour, everyone in chat gets 25% off PL Pro yearly. So you gotta come to chat. I start the stream around like 2 p.m., 2:30 p.m. I do the note stuff around like 5 p.m. The list comes out around 7. So yeah, you should be there next week. Playback.tv/pitchlist. That's fun.
You should be there. I actually, you know what? I have not come to a list creation.
What?
Yeah. Mondays are particularly busy over here.
We'll make them less busy, Eric.
I wish I could. Wish I could. Yeah. But no, it's on my bucket list. It's on my
It's okay. Oh man, wow, that's a touching thing.
It's on my to-do.
Yeah.
We're gonna get into the lists. Yeah. As you mentioned,
please do.
Our theme for today, as you know, I take all my theme ideas from just my everyday life. And I was my wife was out of town this weekend. It was me and my son. And yesterday was a gross day in New York City. Gross, rainy. Yeah. And when you're alone, solo parenting a toddler in the rain, and you can't go outside in New York, where you live in an apartment that's really small. You really have to spend a lot of time thinking about like rainy day activities.
Sure.
So the theme for this list is rainy day activities.
No, I like that. That's good. And what is the name of this list this week?
So the name for the list this week is Walk This Way, with a question mark, named after Walker Buehler, because I don't really know how I want to approach him. He's back. He is back for the first time in over a year.
Yeah.
And that type of return should be met with excitement and anticipation. And I am confused. And so
I'm
put
excited.
That confusion into the title of the list. I mean, I'm excited to watch him pitch, because why wouldn't I be?
Right.
I just mean in terms of like from a fantasy manager standpoint of like, oh my God, I'm getting an ace back. I'm like, I don't know.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, there's a really big startling difference between Walker Buehler throwing with sticky stuff and without sticky stuff. And I don't quite know yet, but I actually have him ranked pretty highly just because there are so few, there's so many guys sure. missing from
and
it.
And we lost two, you know, we lost Musgrove and Eovaldi just recently.
And Grayson Rodriguez, actually.
And Grayson Rodriguez was after the last list. We did get some other guys back. And we'll get to these guys as we get into this list.
It's a good name, by the way. Walk This Way. I like it.
Hey, thanks. It was much better than last week's.
What was it?
I guess, which also a walk adjacent. We're just going to ignore it. Actually, I shouldn't have even brought it up. So, you know, Eric, one.
Eric is the catcher. Never run.
Never run. Yeah.
Only walk.
Sadly, you could probably run on me. My arm was very accurate, but
I'm so sorry.
Good. Yeah, it's okay. Tier number one starts with starting pitcher number one, Corbin Burns. Number two, Mr. Four-Seamer himself, Zach Wheeler. Number three, Tyler Glasnow. Number four, Luis Castillo. Number five, Cole Ragans. Number six, Tarek Skubal. Number seven, Pablo Lopez. Number eight, Freddy Peralta. Number nine, George Kirby. And number 10, Kevin Gausman. What's the tier called and why is it called that?
So, I mean, I think about rainy day activities, and there's a lot of different ways to enjoy that. But I think really, you know, I'm thinking about it of just like you hear the pitter patter outside and you think about what you're doing inside. And there's a whole collective thing that you do. But at the end of the day, it starts with a pillow fort. And you're making a foundation for the entire day with your pillow fort. And that is what tier one is all about.
Love it. Big fan of that. No movement in and out of the tier.
Actually, that's wrong.
Oh, no, actually, Kevin Gossman. Kevin Gossman joined.
Back. Yeah, he joined. He looks so good with those splitters, 11 splitters. Whiffs in his last start, Kevin Gossman. Fastballs are all down to support it. It looked a lot better from Kevin Gossman. And it's like, yeah, okay, this is you looking more like yourself. So you're back here.
What do you make of Gossman throwing a sinker a little more now?
I'm fine. We've seen that happen to a couple of guys, like the Mariners did that, Berrios did that. And it can work really well, just like in a cutter would, where you have a four seamer all the time and just something that is moving a little bit differently to hopefully steal some outs along the way. So I'm cool with it.
I really like it. I mean, I don't really like it as a pitch right now because he can't really throw it in the zone consistently.
Sure.
But I really like it in the sense of like what you and I discussed in the offseason was the four seam gets hit really hard.
Yep.
The splitter is obviously very good, but it is designed to not be thrown in the zone.
Right.
So he basically is like a one pitch pitcher whose second pitch, the four seam fastball, is a high zone rate pitch, but gives up a lot of hard contact to righties. And so I'm like, okay, if you're throwing a sinker and you can get it in on the hands of righties and actually throw it in the strike zone often, now you're giving another pitch to kind of like keep people off of the splitter or just to throw strikes and maybe not give up the amount of hard contact that the fastball does. So in theory, I really do like it.
Yeah, no, it can absolutely work. And again, we've seen it with other four seamer dominant pitchers, especially with those who don't really have a solid number three pitch.
Yeah. You move Freddie Peralta down four spots. I assume this isn't punishment for the suspension.
No, this is command has been wonky for three starts now, and it was even better in the last one, but still wasn't quite there, where at least we saw intent of generalized locations for all of his pitches, where in the previous two it was just here's fastball, I don't know where it's going to go. But he's still off at the moment, and I felt that everybody else was just doing well enough. They're like, yeah, Peralta, you're going to fall down a little bit now.
I like it. The Mr. Four-seam fastball comment from Zach Wheeler was that he basically just threw all four-seam fastballs today against the Giants and annihilated them. I mean,
yep.
Yeah, just got whiffs on it like crazy, which was great to see. Tier number two has a new gatekeeper. It starts with number 11, Max Fried. Number 12, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Number 13, Logan Webb. Number 14, Shota Imanaga. Number 15, Jared Jones. Number 16, Zach Gallen. Number 17, Aaron Nola. Number 18, Joe Ryan. Number 19, Logan Gilbert. And number 20, Chris Sale. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
That one, I know. this one is the hot chocolate because it makes you feel comfortable. Feels good. It warms you up. At the same time, I've actually stopped drinking or pretty much having as much sugar as possible lately. Mm-hmm. So maybe not necessarily something that is so good forever for you to have.
Are you a mini marshmallow guy?
Do I like fun?
Yes, I guess at the end. Well, because some people are the mini marshmallow people, and then some people don't like those, so they get real marshmallows and put them
and
make a normal.
It's all sugar anyway, guys. Come on.
Yeah, I think go with the mini. It is.
We're both great. It's wonderful.
So Logan Webb goes down three spots, leapfrogged by Fried and Yamamoto, and Gossman, actually, I believe. Yeah.
Yes.
Is this concern about Logan Webb, or is it just, Fried and Yamamoto seem to have righted the ship in a sense?
Yeah, I think there's just more potential with those guys. I think when it comes to innings per start, Fried and Yamamoto, maybe Yamamoto, obviously a little bit more limited, but the win potential and the strikeout ability and everything, and also another gear that potentially could be unlocked if Yamamoto actually goes upstairs, that'd be cool. But Max Fried looks like Max Fried right now, and it's pretty fun.
Yamamoto starts throwing the slider a little more
often. Yeah, him and Imanaga both. It's pretty interesting how they are just not really touching their slider or the cutter at all.
I love that. Like there was an article in The Athletic about it, and Austin Barnes, the catcher for the Dodgers, was like, "It's a he's comfortable with it. It's a really nice pitch." And Yamamoto was like, "It's fine." Basically, it was like, it's nothing special. It's like, okay. But, gives him another pitch. We knew that he was somebody who had like five or six pitches coming over from Japan. He has not had to use all of them.
Right.
But I do think it's nice to see that. The two big risers here, Jared Jones, jumped from 20 to 15. Chris Sale moves into the top 20 at number 20. Feels like maybe just kind of like rewarding guys who have looked good and continue to look good.
Right. I mean, it's never really a question of stuff with these guys. It's just, hey, are you going to be able to command enough and also be healthy and be, you know, constantly just be that same thing? And that's what they are. So Jerry Jones, I felt with like Zach Gallen having the hamstring strain that we don't know if it's going to stunt his season moving forward or not. In some way, it has to. And Jerry Jones just being so obviously good. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me not to push Jerry Jones further up. Of course, though, I think like Imanaga, Webb, Yamamoto, Freed all should have more of a leash in a start than Jared Jones, which is why I have Jones below. But I mean, his four seamer and slider, we've said enough about this. They're just absurdly filthy.
Yes, agreed. I want to get into tier three anyway, because tier three is a fun tier, in my opinion.
Ooh.
So tier three starts with number 21, Kyle Bradish.
Mm-hmm.
Number 22, Sonny Gray. Number 23, Justin Steele. Number 24, Walker Buehler. Number 25, Framber Valdez. And number 26, Dylan Cease. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
So when I was a camp counselor, we had to have rainy day activities, right? Mm-hmm. We had to have these things that were prepared for when we couldn't do the normal stuff we would go outside and do. And one of them was battleship with other cabins. So we had like a cabin of eight kids that, you know, as counselors we would oversee. We'd have a walkie-talkie and we'd be playing battleship over walkie-talkie with them. The thing is, it can be great. It can also be kind of boring because you're not really doing a whole lot as a cabin together, right? So this could be the most fun time ever, or it can kind of not really be so great, and thus it's the ace is going to ace potential tier three.
I like that. And I like what you said about that, because it really comes to this idea. The reason I like this tier is like it's so I don't know if volatile is the word.
Yeah,
I was gonna say I don't know if volatile is the word, but like I could see any of these pitchers being in the like in the top 15 or outside of the top 40. Like,
yeah.
I could tell myself a narrative on all of it. Some of it's injury related, obviously, with like we don't know what's gonna happen with Kyle Bradish. Mm-hmm. You know, Walker Buehler, we have no idea. Sonny Gray has, you know, looked good last year, but he's fallen apart at times. Framber, same thing. Elbow, is it healthy? Is it good? I think so. Dylan Cease is the king of like, we don't know what we're going to get from him whenever he's out there. So it's a really interesting tier. Let's just talk about Steele and Buehler, who you moved into this tier. Why did this feel like the appropriate place for them?
So Justin Steele, I'm so sorry. He's ready to go. From my understanding, he's going tonight. Obviously, we'll see from there. But I've been more impressed with Justin Steele's approach and his ability to change the shape of both his fastball and his slider. I actually talked to Tyone about it last week, and he was just saying it's ridiculous what Justin Steele doesn't do, and I hate it. He's like, he was jealous about it. It was pretty fun. But I'm more of a believer in that being just a consistent floor with 25% strikeout ability. And I don't really think that was interrupted by this hamstring strain. Well, Walker Buehler is a big question mark. He was a top 10 pitcher for a winning ball club who mm-hmm. would need him to go 6+ frames every night. And that doesn't really change that much moving forward, right? It's already the middle of May, or at least the start of May. And it's not like they want Buehler to only throw 100 innings before the playoffs. They want to make sure that he's in rhythm for the playoffs. So sure, they might slow him down initially, but I still feel as if Walker Buehler post Tommy John should be very, very effective. We typically see that. If anything, actually, there's an argument to be made that the only safe pitchers these days are the ones who just got Tommy John, right? Because everyone else, we don't know what their status is.
Is about to get Tommy John.
Right. But you have it now, you know, and it's like usually was a 300 inning honeymoon or something like that, that actually Eno was saying was that maybe is not the case anymore.
Yeah.
But here he's coming back. I mean, look, we see Reagan's, we see Scuba looking great with their post Tommy John's, right? Hopefully Buehler is just like that. And I kind of felt like by tier four, tier five, I mean, it really could get very dicey. Like, no, Buehler, this is Buehler and Steele and Sonny Gray's killing it. And Kyle Bradish, just throw more curveballs for strikes and that should be good. Dylan Cease, I think, is looking better as a Padre. And Framber Valdez didn't have his slider for whatever reason.
Yeah.
It showed up and it's like, yeah, I'm good.
So I was looking at that too, because I am covering him for my Mixing It Up article, which comes out Wednesday. And then I was like, I wonder if it was altitude. If he went to it because he wanted to go, like, it was just getting away from the sinker a little bit in his version of his fastball, mm-hmm. right? Getting away from it a little bit in Mexico City, which has even higher altitude than Coors. Right. You know, he threw 27 sinkers in that game. That's a 38% usage. It was back up almost at 45% the next start, and the slider went way down. Two starts, so it's all a guess. But that was what popped into my head.
I mean, it was 10 whiffs on that slider, and it's just like, oh, that's just a one-time thing. Like, come on, that can't be it. I don't know. It's all very weird. And I think with Framber, we just say, cool, you're just gonna start, and we're gonna go from there.
Yeah. Chair number four starts with number 27, Bailey Ober. Number 28, Yusei Kikuchi. Number 29, Ronel Blanco. Number 30, Nick Pivetta. Number 31, Zach Eflin. And number 32, Brian Wu. What's the tier called? Why is it called that?
This is the movie marathon, you know? And it's the stuff that's already, it's in the cupboard. You know it's there. You know it's going to be value. You know what you're going to get. Sometimes you're like, oh man, I'm just so excited to watch that movie. And sometimes like, yeah, I know this is there and they'll be there for me, but I'm not going to pump my fist that today we're watching Mission Impossible for the fifth time.
Oh, I do. Yeah.
I mean, that wasn't me. Oh, that was my family.
oh, fair. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. We got to talk about the surprise here. It's Yusei Kikuchi up inside the top 30. Yeah, I mean, we talked earlier on in the season. Actually, we talked preseason about him developing that changeup.
Right.
We were like, oh, well, he did the curveball last year and it really worked. And maybe he's going to add this changeup and that's going to take him to another level. And it was not a good first couple starts.
Didn't help him at all. Yeah, no.
And then he ditched it and went back to what worked last year and has really kind of taken off since then. And it feels a little bit like a pitcher realizing that I maybe didn't need a new thing. I'm just going to go back to doing what I was doing before.
Yeah, 100%. Yusei Kikuchi has, it might surprise a lot of people just how well he's been pitching. 2.29 ERA, 1.05 WHIP, and a 28% K rate, which is a 4% walk rate across his last six starts. And that's excluding the first game, which is the one that had the changeup. Mm-hmm. Right. And then he said, no, I'm good. I'm not going to do that anymore. And instead, it's been a 4% changeup usage and back to the 32% curveball and 20% slider and 44% fastball. He's actually elevated that four-seamer more this year than he did last year, which has been really nice. Four of those six starts have come with at least seven strikeouts. Yeah, Yusei Kikuchi looks locked in as a fastball, curveball, slider guy. It's pretty much the same guy we saw in the second half of last year, just repeated again. And yeah, it's great. Like I look at all of these and I think, all right, what Kikuchi's doing is really more akin to like the SP35, SP40. In general in the preseason. But when you look at, of course, the injured table, you realize, oh, right, that equates to about a 28 right now.
Mm-hmm. Also, two unranked guys enter in here, Pivetta and Brian Wu, both coming back from injury. Pivetta we have seen already this year, so we have a baseline of like expectation for him. And so it makes sense to slot him in here. Wu, we haven't seen yet this year, dealing with elbow inflammation. So there's like a little concern because it's elbow, but again, there was nothing torn like a Kyle Bradish situation. This is a round where you had him in the preseason. So I just assume that, you know, he's looked good in his rehab starts. In particular, no walks.
That's pretty cool.
17-0 walk to strikeout rate in AAA. he only threw breaking balls for one of the starts, but he was pounding the zone with the fastball. That's been nice. You're pretty, you know, jazzed to see him back.
I mean, Brian Wu to me in the preseason was around here in my ranks. And the way I see it is I see the flattest four-seamer among all starting pitchers last year. And that's why he had an elite swing strike rate on his four seamer. He also included a sinker against righties that worked so well. And I see a generally good command pitcher, someone who will be able to adapt as the season goes on to improve that slider, that cutter, figure out exactly the thing that he should be doing to make it better against lefties, and of course have a little bit more stability against righties. Brian Wu to me is, I don't know, I loved him in the preseason as a major breakout candidate. And here he is coming back theoretically at a lower rank because of, again, the landscape shifting. But I'm stoked for this. I can't wait. If you want, I say this to everybody, you can treat like a still ill if you want. I got a lot of questions early this morning on the stream.
It might be Oakland also.
Who do I drop to start Brian Wu? I'm like, guys, it might not be until like Friday. Like, you don't need to worry about this now.
Yeah.
Trust me, there is so much information that happens in 4 days. And if you want, you have the ability. Like, how valuable is that one start for Brian Wu versus knowing better who to drop in a week as opposed to in 3 days, right?
Right.
That can be a major decision, especially for those that are in shallower leagues where it is a lot of the guys that I say, hey, everyone should have these players rostered in your 12 teamers. Mm-hmm. So do the wise thing here. It's also the week of like a lot of IL guys returning, coming back. Like, I had to activate Justin Steele today, which I all thank gosh I made it. Oh man, I'm having like my best early season in my two Yahoo leagues. Okay.
I'm doing pretty well in my NFBC and I'm in first in AL tout, but I am
not.
Look at you. My Yahoo leagues are trailing a little bit behind.
I'm in first in both my Yahoo leagues right now.
Nice.
And one of them I drafted Strider and Steele and Brian Wu.
I tried in the pitcherless league. There was a very low innings pitch limit. And I was like, okay, everybody in this league is going to be locked into starters because it's a pitcherless league. So I will get like one or two good starters and then get all elite relievers and just load up my hitting. Yeah, and I've never done that strategy before. That's not my strategy. Yeah. And so I kept getting really good relievers, but at points in the draft where I probably should have been taking hitters. So it just didn't work out.
Oh, no, I'm so sorry. But anyway, I understand the decisions you guys have to make with that. And yeah, Brian Wu, if you want to wait one more, same thing with Nick Pivetta, especially Nick Pivetta against Atlanta. That makes a ton of sense. It's exciting. I'm looking forward to both of them.
I did want to ask you, so people have been asking me this question. We talk about this all the time. I go to the pitcherless page. You say Brian Wu has a flat fastball.
Correct.
So I'm looking at his vertical approach angle.
Yep.
And because it's negative 3.8.
Oh, no, you should be looking at the HAVA.
The height adjusted.
Height adjusted. Yeah. And height adjusted, I know it's a terrible name. I call it attack angle is what I do. Is just a simpler term that's more understandable. And that says if this pitch is thrown down the middle, is it flat or steep? Mm-hmm. And that means the way I like that one more is if you throw the ball high, it's going to be a flatter innately than if you throw it low.
Right.
So the VAA is actually based on where the locations of the pitches are, while the height adjusted VAA is what it actually is. So the guys can change it. This is why Yamamoto, for example, I'm like, you have an amazing height adjusted VAA and you're not getting the best VAA because of that. You could be getting a much better one that is flatter. So a 1.9 height adjusted VAA is 100th percentile. Yeah.
So why do you like seeing a flat fastball like that up in the zone?
Oh, because that is that gives less time to intersect with the natural bat path upstairs. Bat path upstairs are steeper, and then if they're lower, they are flatter. That is as the bat goes through the zone, it is like a going on top of a smooth surface. But if you're swinging at the top of the zone, it's like you're I don't know, you're reaching up for a high five.
Yeah.
You want to not match that upstairs, and the steep guys, the ball intersects with the bat a ton when you throw it upstairs. But if it's flat, just one small moment, one small part, if it's really flat, will you be able to hit it? So really good to have that. It's why Brian Wu last year, what was the ridiculous number that he had on his four seamer last year? Oh, I don't know. Just a 16% swing strike rate, 95th percentile. That's absolutely crazy. Also 95th percentile ICR rate. At 34% because he got all those pop-ups as well. Yeah. So really good.
And that's, this is the things like, oh, I had a lot of questions about it. It's like, oh, but his IVB wasn't good.
Right. Right?
And like, yes, yep. His IVB was 13.8. But as Nick's pointing out, like it is also the flatness of the fastball and the location up in the zone. So yeah, it's really nice to have an IVB 15, 16, 17. And if you have an IVB of 17 and you throw it up in the zone, kind of like a Cutter Crawford, like that is also good. But that's not the only way to be good in the top of the zone with a fastball. You could also have a flat fastball like Wu and throw it up.
It's kind of interesting. I'm trying to think of it like VAA stuff is about timing.
Mm-hmm.
And vert is about like precision almost of like, where do they think the ball is going to land? And then when is the ball going to land? So VAA limits the opportunities to make contact with the bat. So the flatter it is, there's only this one point that you can make contact as opposed to being steep where you have a couple more points because it's following the bat path or the ball path. Yep. But then like vert is saying, hey, where is the ball actually going to go? Is it going to go drop this much or drop that much? Right.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's a different skill set. Actually, it does make me think, like, I wonder if there are guys that we can say as hitters that are better versus flat versus movement.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are
versus, and that's actually a really interesting way to see like who's good against what and like day to day, being, oh, this guy's going to be better against this kind of fastball or something like that. That's interesting. Yeah, maybe we'll
look into that. You got some people that I know can
we do
can look into that.
We do have some.
We're gonna get into the next tier. We're gonna do that though after this break. Before we jump into tier five, just a reminder, we talked about this the last time too, but if you can rate and review this podcast, it's super helpful to us.
It really
has helped to get that out there. You know, so take a little minute, rate and review, download, listen, all those things. They're great, but the rating and reviewing really does help. So tier number five starts with number 33, Michael King, number 34, Justin Verlander, number 35, Nestor Cortez, number 36, Yu Darvish, number 37, Cutter Crawford, number 38, Ryan Pepiot, number 39, Tanner Bibee, and number 40, Tanner Houck. What's the tier called and why is it called that?
It's called the Dusty Board Games because it's just like, all right, we're just going to play a game and you're going to sit there and you're going to do it and you're discovering the new ones in there, but it's like, yep, cool. We're going to play Parcheesi today.
Okay. Parcheesi. I was trying to think of like who might the Parcheesi be in this particular tier.
Justin Verlander, of course.
Yeah, that's true. It is Justin Verlander. I did want to talk about Bibee. Technically, Yu Darvish is the biggest mover in this tier because he was unranked, but he was injured and is back. Bibee's down 12 spots to number 39. It has been a super inconsistent year for him. Every time I think about like fully writing him off, he has a decent start that makes you go, okay. Like, obviously, he's a talented young pitcher. There's upside here, blah, blah, blah. And then there's another really poor start. Would you say that, like, you're more on the side of thinking it's not really coming together right now? Or are you still, like, holding out hope for Bibee?
I think that there are elements that make Bibee really good. Slider and changeup, I think, are really hard to hit pitches. And that's really cool. He doesn't command them super well. And this was a big thing from last year. And also his four-seamer, speaking of attack angle, is the opposite of Wu's. It is so absurdly steep, which means, oh, cool, you throw that low and you have success then. Nope. He throws it super high. And his whole thing is stay verti, which is about staying vertical with your with everything that he does and just keep it upstairs. And that works when he has his changeup and his slider down. Great. When he doesn't, which is probably going to be more consistent, it can be rough. So I actually do think that Tanner Bibee can be the low called strike guy because it is a high vert. And we've seen that from like Zach Gallen, where if you have a high vert and you have a steep angle, then you can steal these called strikes at the bottom zone really well. And then you can go changeup and slider underneath it, right? However, that's not really what Bibee's going to do. And in the past, he's been able to get by with the changeup and slider. I think the bad starts we see are when those are not that good and then the fastball gets hit. So I think it's going to be more helpful than harmful. Like I see the 4+ ERA and the 130+ whip. I don't think that that's who Bibee is. But yeah, I don't really think that he's a budding ace either until he really figures out either the changeup and slider command or a different approach with his fastball.
Yeah, you know, we talked in the preseason and I said, you know, this is when I was really getting into like what you guys have on pitcher list and looking at the locations. And I was like, look, you know, Bibee threw his slider up in the zone like over 20% of the time last year.
Yeah.
Like, I know it was fine, but to me it was like that's not an approach that works. And I even talked about it on in the Pitcherless podcast where we were doing at PitchCom. And I was like, it's hard to say this isn't gonna work because it worked really well last year. Well, he's throwing it up in the zone technically less this year, but he's throwing it middle more this year.
Yeah,
right. His high lock is lower, but his middle percentage is higher. But if you also just look at it in general, like the contact, I mean, this year he's allowing a 15% barrel rate and a 37% ICR on the slider. And last year it was just a 5% barrel rate and 29% ICR. It's just like the chicken came home to roost at some point. Like it was just an approach that shouldn't have worked, that was working, and now it's not working. And that does give me a little bit of pause. I agree with everything you said about like it's in there, but I'm obviously not like dropping him. I don't have a lot of confidence at it at the exact moment. Like I would like, right. I need to see it happen a little bit more often.
Yeah. The YM lock, that is the middle height of the four seamer, has gone up 8 points and you really don't want that. It's just not good for Tanner Bibee right now. He needs to get low lock on it. It's just an 18% rate on that four seamer. Even though, again, the height adjusted VAA for Bibee's four seamer is 14th percentile, which essentially means that, yeah, you should be throwing that down. You should be doing it there, and he just doesn't do it.
Yeah, he needs to. We could say he needs to be an East Side boy and get low, low, low.
There it is. Let it loose, Eric. See the real guy in there.
Yeah. Listen, anytime you can make a Lil Jon reference, you got to do it. And then Ryan Pepiot, fingers crossed, taking 107-mile-an-hour comebacker off the shin. Probably not a good feeling. And we just hope he's healthy and not going to, you know.
And there's Yu Darvish, by the way, he returned last week.
True. Yes.
And I don't know what to make of him still. I mean, that start was just sliders and fastballs for the most part. Like, hey, welcome back. Okay. I guess you're all right. I hope that Darvish can really put it together. I really liked at the beginning of the year his ability to not give in like he used to in the past. He would just be like, okay, fine, here's a cutter. Do something with this cutter, right? And now he's saying, no, I'm going to throw a slider here. I'm going to throw a sweeper here. I'm going to stay around the edges more and be more deliberate with everything that I do, which I really like. So I'm curious to see if that does come back now that he's had some time off.
Yeah. Fingers crossed, man. I mean, we know the talent and just want to make sure that comes through. It's kind of what I was hoping for his teammate, Joe Musgrove, and maybe we'll see that when he gets off the IL.
He had a good start, and then
He did. I know.
It's so cruel. It's always like that. Whenever they have the one good start that's finally their back, they get hurt. Oh, boy.
Speaking of back, tier number 6 starts at number 41, John Means. Number 42. Renato Lopez, number 43, Ranger Suarez, number 44, Jose Berrios, and number 45, Chris Bassett. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Well, I have the name for the next one. Okay. This is this is puddle jumping.
Okay.
So, and you know, it's a rainy day activity. Doesn't mean you have to stay inside, guys. All right. You can go outside, and yet you are going to get a bit wet. All right, you are going to have some days with Chris Bassett and Berrios where just it isn't good. But you're going to look back fondly the entire way through.
See, I think that's a perfectly apt tier name, and that's because for me in puddle jumping, I will not look back fondly. it's just not for me, man. You know what I mean?
Depends on who you're with.
I don't need to get unnecessarily just like soaking wet pants.
You're wearing the wrong pants.
Bassett thing, it's listen, I have faded Chris Bassett for like 4 years in a row and was wrong every year. And maybe this is the year that I'll be right.
Nah, you won't be.
Yeah, that's probably not.
Call strikes are still there with the sinker. His slider kind of performed a little bit worse, but he'll be fine.
We'll see. I guess we'll see. The big guy that we disagreed on last week, though, was John Means.
Mm.
I said that I thought he was a slightly better version of Cole Irvin in terms of just like what you were generally getting out of him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the start this weekend was really good from a results perspective. I'm curious your thoughts on it. You're obviously were higher on him going into the start than I was. I didn't see anything actionably different about him as a pitcher, other than obviously the changeup velocity was up 2 miles an hour, and maybe that's deliberate, and maybe he's trying to throw a harder changeup with slightly less movement. It certainly worked on Saturday. The rest of the profile struck me as similar enough that it's like, if you believed in John Means before, you should believe in him. And if you were hesitant about John Means before, he's not a drastically different guy.
Well, he might be.
Okay. Other than the changeup, you think?
His command and approach was different than what I had seen before. And it's a very small sample of one start. Yes. But I do want to give an idea of why I'm pretty excited about this. Command-wise, everything was pretty much like upper third for the four-seamer. And it was a 64% high lock in this game. Well, previously, we'd pretty much across his career, it's like a 53% or so. And then low lock was just 9% despite being around like 15 to 20 in previous mm-hmm. seasons. And he's really elevating that thing with intent. Meanwhile, his changeup, which has had about 50% zone rates, was only 36%. But it was not high. It wasn't lofted. And this has actually been a thing with John Means for a while for me. Is his changeup is always good, but it's just always too hittable in the zone. And this one, he actually went down in arm side and lived there. And it was beautiful. And it made me feel like he was, I don't know, just trying to actually do the Blake Snell blueprint, or really, as Fast would call it, the Imperial Shuttle, because he also had his slider glove side beautifully. I mean, this pitch was just hovering glove side endlessly. It used to be like a 65%-ish strike rate. This was 72%. Got all the whiffs on it. Like, that's not really been a whiff pitch in the past. It was all really exciting, all played off of each other. Like, upstairs four-seamer, glove side slider, arm side changeup, that's it. That's what I've been wanting from Means forever, and he did it and had absurd success. So I'm pretty interested in that. And I do want to mention, in the past with John Means, like, he didn't have Baltimore, and he didn't have a winning team behind him. Now he does, and he has Allie Rutschman, which is even better.
Yeah.
So I'm pretty hyped by this.
So really good stuff. Probably a good indicator for me that, like, I'm focusing a lot on like velocity and raw stuff when
I'm focusing on command, and I don't know how.
But everything you just said is a really valid way of being like, okay, it might not look the same when you're looking at like the stuff, but it is different if you're looking at intent. And I hadn't broken down like the intent of where things were located enough to spot that difference. So it's a super valuable thing to bring up. My other question for you, given how few innings he's thrown over the last seasons, mm-hmm. I was surprised they let him go 7, but he was feeling it and he wasn't throwing boatload of pitches. So why not?
Right.
But he obviously, he's not going to last long in the season if he's going 7 every time. Well,
why not?
Might not. So that I guess that feeds to my question. This, you're anticipating this is not like a Jared Jones situation where they're going to monitor his innings, even though Means has been a valuable piece for them. But now he's a veteran. Now he's not as much of a long-term need. Yeah, so they're just going to throw him as much as they need to.
You know what's kind of crazy? You know the contract that they have for 2025 with John Means, right?
I don't actually.
Yeah. Because they don't have one. He's a free agent at the end of this year.
Well, listen, all I know is that's what we said was the argument for Spencer Turnbull, and he's going to the bullpen.
Well, that's a different thing, I feel. I don't know. This is whatever. John Means, he's been expected to be a staple of this rotation. They're just going to go, great. We need every single win we can get with this. We are going to just let this ride. And honestly, Tommy John is like, I was just joking that like you're healthy after this. So. I'm excited about this, John Means. I might be overvaluing that command of one game, and very much have done that before. And command is less sticky than the stuff, and the stuff itself doesn't look that different. I actually have not looked too much into if the slider is a massive change or not. Quickly looking at it, it does not really look very different. Yeah, I mean, I'm a fan of this. I feel like it's a good situation for John Means. And really, you look at this, it's tier 6, tier 7, tier 8. It's not your studs. It's not like your, oh man, I know this guy's going to be an ace stuff. We're kind of past it at this point.
Yeah.
And like Means, Lopez, Ranger Suarez, Barrios, Bassett. These are the guys like, look, I'm going to start these every 5 days or so. Probably not as much with Ranger Suarez, but he's just doing so well. I'm like, fine. But yeah, he's not going to be this good likely. I hope he is though.
Yeah. No, you're talking me into it a little bit. I had some hesitation on like how deep into games he was going to go regularly. And obviously the stuff.
That means business. No,
these are all very valid points. I will say that there is somebody in the next tier who I bid more for this weekend when I had the opportunity. And we will talk about that person after this break.
So really, Eric, you'd rather have Christian Scott on your team than John Means?
I would, yes.
Why?
And so tier 7 begins with Mackenzie Gore at number 46, and then Garrett Crochet at 47, number 48, Jack Flaherty, number 49, Bryce Miller, number 50, Hunter Green, number 51, Nick Lodolo, number 52, Christian Scott, and number 53, Carlos Rodon. What's this tier called, and why is it called that?
7 for 7, Eric. I'm proud of you. And
listen, I nailed the last 2 weeks. I haven't missed one. I'm in my groove right now. It was a rough couple of starts, but I'm Jalen Brunson. I'm feeling it right now, and we're gonna keep going.
Yeah. Oh right. Yeah, Jalen Brunson. We made it to the second round, right?
Yes. We're good. The game's on right now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So, what's funny is I didn't know that Eric was talking about Christian Scott. I just assumed it was because of all this. But anyway, this is the Price is Right tier. Because I know a rainy day to me kind of feels a little bit like a sick day. And let's be honest with you, one of the exciting things about being sick at home is putting on The Price is Right at 11 a.m. in the morning. It's the only time you get to watch it. It's just when you were sick or it was a rainy day. Or like maybe it was
Or when you went to Florida to visit your grandma over the holidays.
Right. It was Price is Right. So that's what this one is, because it's always very exciting, but it's also could be like candy. And it's just kind of a fleeting thing.
Love it. Yeah. The answer to your question is yes. I did bid more for Christian Scott than John Means.
Why do you like Christian Scott more?
I'm a stuffist, man.
Keep going.
And I say this not even like when Eno says he's a stuffist and he means his own numbers. I just mean like I watched that game and I was just like, I think this kid's stuff is really, really good. That fastball had so much life on it.
Yeah, it's a fun one.
I loved the way he got after it. Sweeper is also a really good pitch. So I think it's a stable two pitch foundation. I thought the slider was better than I expected, given what I had read in prospect notes that like it was kind of like an pitch. And he didn't use the splitter that much, but he uses the splitter more to lefties. So I think it's a pitch that's going to be just kind of like mixed in sporadically, but it does give him, you know, multiple pitches to throw to hitters of both handedness. I love the way that he attacked. It was something we talked about like with Jared Jones in the spring. And again, I'm not comparing Christian Scott to Jared Jones, but I'm comparing him in the sense of like, there is a demeanor on the mound that's just like, I'm going to throw this pitch and it's a good pitch and I'm going to just come at you with it and we're going to see what you're going to do. And there were times where like he just missed on a pitch. And even if he just missed and like he was in a bat with, man, I forget who it was even. It might have been like Harold Ramirez. I don't know. He worked a really long at bat and he threw a fastball outside that just missed for a walk and he kind of smirked. And he was like, he wasn't upset about it. He was just like, I threw my pitch. I had that. I didn't get it. And so I understand that there's not like a metric connected to that, but the stuff grades, particular PLV grades, back up that the arsenal is pretty good. And then that supports what I saw with my eyes watching him, that I felt like the Arsenal was good. And then so to me, I think that demeanor will allow him to get the most out of that, or get more out of that Arsenal than if he was a little bit more like timid in how he was attacking hitters, or maybe a little bit like uncomfortable or overwhelmed by the opportunity, or whatever. And I think that the runway is there. Like, I understand Tyler McGill is coming back. Like, I get that there are names for the Mets, but I just don't see how you take Christian Scott out of the rotation right now for any of like Tyler McGill, Jose Quintana, Adrian Hauser. Like, you the genie is out of the bottle at this point. Like, I don't see how you send him back down to let those guys pitch.
Yeah. So I guess my biggest concern about Christian Scott is, what does he do against lefties?
I mean, I would say he probably goes four seam splitter.
Yeah. That splitter isn't very good.
I think it's good enough as a complimentary pitch. Mm. Like, I wouldn't want you to lean on it aggressively.
Yeah.
But I think the four seam worked.
The four seam is good
to lefties, and I think it will. Interestingly enough, like, again, we're talking about one start here. Mm-hmm. He went to the slider, you know, a decent amount versus lefties. He obviously wasn't throwing the sweeper. So he went to the slider, he went to the splitter. The slider did not grade out particularly well.
Yeah, he did only threw like a, it was only a couple left-handed batters, is the thing.
Right. Yeah. But slider was 16% usage to lefties. So you can get a sense of like, that's gonna be your second pitch.
I think he threw like two or three. Yeah.
Because he didn't throw his sweeper. So he went four seam slider splitter. Right.
So I think it's
four seam with two secondaries to lefties. But I think if you're commanding that four seam well enough, and you're just giving pitches, other pitches, you're changing the level, you're changing the timing, mm-hmm. you're changing where a hitter's looking, and your hope is just like, I'm not gonna tear up lefties unless my four seam is just really good on a particular day. But mm-hmm. I maybe don't get burned by them. And then I really do well against righties.
Sure. So here's the whole scenario for me with Christian Scott. The Rays are not a good offense. And he also was given the gift of very few lefties in this game. So Christian Scott looked as good as you could hope for, really, in a debut in this way. He has a pretty flat fastball, and he does a great job of locating upstairs. 73% of Christian Scott's four seamers were high location, the 97th percentile, right? That's amazing. I love that immensely. The sweeper does well against the righties, and I don't have that much faith in the slider and splitter against lefties. So what I see here is a guy that should be effective against righties for the most part, and is going to have to figure things out against left-handers. I think about like Clark Schmidt, for example. I know it sounds crazy to say, but Clark Schmidt has like the whole arsenal built to destroy right-handers. Mm-hmm. I mean, like completely just, here it is. Sinkers destroy you inside, and I can throw these cutters and curves and sweepers away from you. It's amazing. And then lefties, it's like, oh boy, what do I do? Now, Christian Scott's four-seamer should perform better than anything I think that Clark Schmidt has. You just need something a little bit more, I think. And I think that's going to be a problem for him. And I'm in on Christian Scott. Just so we're clear here, this is after one start against the Rays, and I already have him at 52. Mm-hmm. I have John Means favored because, look, John Means has done this before. I know what we're going to get. I know it's a better ball club for wins. I know that you are going to be stable through the year more than I know with Christian Scott a little bit. I think I'm going to continuously raise Christian Scott with every start. It's actually very interesting to me that I have him and Bryce Miller together, because Miller, I think, has a better four-seamer than Christian Scott. Christian Scott does not have any IVB on his. It's a flat 1.5, not the 1.9 of Brian Wu. It's 95. And I think that Bryce Miller just is like, that four-seamer is incredible. But we've seen how Bryce Miller doesn't have anything against lefties, and it really messes him up. Mm-hmm. But at least Scott has a sweeper against right-handers, right? So I like Christian Scott. I do. I just think we need to see more and see if that is going to be a problem for him or not.
So this is where we differ maybe just in terms of like how we construct a roster too, is like I take Bryce Miller over John Means all day, every day too. I just think the upside is significantly higher, and I understand everything you're saying about John Means, and maybe I'm just like too down on a guy who's going to be an 8K per nine, like 21%.
See, I don't know that. That's the thing guy. Is that we don't know that. You just that's got who he, like an amazing game.
I know, but that's who he's always been.
Yeah, and so, no, that's like, very fair.
And so I know he was great on Saturday. He's always been that guy. And so I'm not, I guess, willing to think that at this point in his career, John Means is going to come back a drastically different pitcher.
Sure.
And so is my propensity to gravitate toward strikeout pitchers sometimes, does it sometimes get me into trouble? Like, yeah, sure. But it sometimes gets us guys like Jared Jones in the preseason or Luis Gil in the preseason. Absolutely. And the, I'm not saying Christian Scott is going to be Jared Jones, but I just mean, I would take a gamble on guys like Bryce Miller and Christian Scott, who we've seen look good, right? It's not like, hey, Jose Soriano has great stuff, like I'm going to take him over John Means. Like, no, I've seen those other guys like match the stuff with the results in a way that is exciting. And I don't know how consistent it will be, but like, I'll take that over a John Means profile.
It's pretty crazy, right? I'm saying like, oh man, Bryce Miller. So it's interesting. The whole Bryce Miller conversation is fun for me because I mean, this season he's killed it, right? 261 ERA, 0.92 whip, 27% K rate. Like, it's really just this start against the Astros where it really was just like a bad inning that really messed them up. And of course, the first one against Boston wasn't very good. However, what I see with Bryce Miller is like more of the same from last year. And there's a lot of reasons to believe that he's not going to maintain what he has right now. It's like an 89% left on base rate. You know, he's getting a ton of hit luck as well. Like, it's a sub 200 BABIP, all that kind of stuff. We all know those things with Bryce Miller. But the thing with Bryce Miller is that he's not really adding anything. That is, like, it's still just a four-seamer dominance. And then the splitter, sweeper, sliders. I mean, sinker is helping, I think. And that's good. But you still don't have a reliable secondary. None of those are above a 60% strike rate. The slider and sweeper both have sub 10% swing strike rates. Actually, he's thrown 61 sweepers, Bryce Miller, and not a single one has earned a whiff yet. Yeah. I've never seen that. So I mean, I guess what I'm getting at is like, I think I'm on your side about like Toby's versus strikeout, right? Like, I'm generally on your side in this.
But I think John Means is a Toby.
I think that John Means is showcasing something more than that. And actually, before he got Tommy John, we were kind of hoping he would take that leap. And it does, like, early indications are really good, and it's a better situation for wins and everything, consistency. Well, Bryce Miller, I see someone who is still figuring it out a bit. And I know, what? He just went 7 innings, 1 run, 10 Ks against Atlanta. Yeah, I'm with you. That was, how good is Atlanta right now in their offense? It's fine. Bryce Miller is still good. And Christian Scott, I mean, yeah, I could very well look at this and be like, Nick, what were you thinking at 52? You should put him up to, by like 40 at Tanner Houck or above Tanner Bibee or whatever it is. And honestly, I see that. I think it's something where I need to see a start that's not against Tampa Bay and against more lefties before I can really feel good about that.
Yeah, I get that. And I guess we'll see how it plays out. I'm glad you brought up Bryce Miller because he was the conversation I was going to have next. Nice. But we got to get to the second half of this top 100.
What?
And it starts with number 54, Seth Lugo. Number 55, Jordan Montgomery. Number 56, Marcus Stroman. Number 57, Aaron Civale. Number 58, Reese Olson. Number 59, Jordan Hicks. Number 61, Christopher Sanchez. Number 60, Christopher Sanchez. Number 61, Jameson Taillon. Number 62, Clark Schmidt. Number 63, Javier Assad. And number 64, Casey Mize. What's this tier called? And why is it called that?
This is a blanket in a book. Gotta have a nice blanket. A little nook in there too.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, there is something called the Nick Nook, by the way. And it is... it is the place that people, they need comfort in their lives. And it's, I give the best hug. It's called a Nick Nook. And it's real and it's amazing. And this is the blanket in the nook with the book.
So I'm curious that this is like your comforting nook, Nick Nook book tier.
Yeah.
Because so many of them feature huge red numbers going down the rankings, which would seem to imply a lack of confidence in or a souring to an extent on some of these guys like Stroman, Aaron Savali, Jordan Hicks, Christopher Sanchez, Casey Mize. But obviously the title maybe implies you're not as sour on them as I mean.
Yeah, you know, the numbers are whatever. It's these are the guys that are like, okay, cool, you need like six innings. They're always going to be there and be good. These are your Tobies. These are the ones that are the protectors of your staff and keep you away from the terrors of the waiver wire. So there are a lot of interesting guys that showed up this past week. Right? You have Christian Scott, you have John Means, you have all the injured guys, five of them returning inside of that top 54, right? You also have like Jack Flaherty going up and Ranger Suarez. And I just kind of reorganized stuff. I actually pushed up Hunter Green and Nick Lodolo as well as more interesting players. And it just made the guys that were right at the end of the cliff, like protectors of the cliff, the barrier on the highway, just get pushed back a little further.
That's fair. Jameson Taillon up 11 spots, somebody that we talked about in the preseason as being, you know, pretty in on. I think everybody's heard all those episodes.
I mentioned a week ago on this, I think, and on the Plus Pitch podcast that I got to talk to Taillon on the field last Wednesday. Yeah. It was so fun. I didn't record a podcast or anything like that or, you know, do anything video, no nothing. Just kind of wanted to go meet him and just talk shop for a bit without him feeling like I was, you know, getting content out of it. I hate that word so much. And
content.
I hate it. But it was really fun. And what was really reassuring to me was, you know, just a lot of the thought process of the different things that he's doing. And we saw it in that, you know, he talked a lot about the game against the Mets earlier that week and the different approaches. And one that I really liked was him thinking like in the moment, he knew, for example, he could go four seamer upstairs and probably get a strikeout, but instead threw another cutter because he knew in that moment that he had full control of that cutter and he knew he would get an out on it. And it wasn't a strikeout. I was like, yeah, I could probably do that. But then again, I don't feel as confident in that four seamer right now than I do my cutter. And that's cool because I'm all about pitch efficiency. One of the things we have now is out percentage. I've thought a lot about like pitches per out and everything like that. And there's one area that is going the opposite direction when it comes to pitcher quality is how many innings you go and how efficiently you can go deep into games. And Taillon is showcasing that he has a large enough repertoire to figure out the pitch that is working and to lean into that. Like, especially against right-handers, he loves going down and away with cutters all the time. But if he doesn't have that, he has the sinker to go inside. He saves the four-seamer upstairs, right? I do worry a little bit about lefties because the cutter is more of a gyro than it is a horizontal. So don't think of it like as an opposite two seamer. It's more of like a less drop slider, right? A shorter one. So that means he can't really jam them inside with it. So that means it's going to be backdoor cutters and sweepers with some high four seamers in there, which isn't ideal. And then really the curveball is the main pitch for him there. Overall, I feel like what Taillon brings to the table is pretty safe and secure.
Yeah, I'm fully in. Your conversation with him that I watched on YouTube was part of the reason I was fully in.
Nice! Great to hear. Yeah, that was really fun, guys. If you haven't seen that one, that was from over the summer. We broke down an entire game with him. It was great.
Yeah, we got a lot of movers and shakers here in tier number 9. It starts at number 65, Taj Bradley. Number 66, Andrew Abbott. Number 67, Edward Cabrera. Number 68, Brady Singer. Number 69, Brandon Pfaadt. Number 70, Tristan McKenzie. What's this tier called? Why is it called that?
Well, this is actually a really good one. I'm going to tell you that after this break. All right. So, Eric, this one, I know it's going to be crazy, but this is a tomato soup and grilled cheese. And that's because you might burn yourself.
No, that tier needs
to be. When having this tomato soup.
It's just classic. That's a classic tier. Love that. Now I'm hungry. I'll make a snack later. Let's start positive. Bradley and Andrew Abbott join the list coming off injuries. Actually, Andrew Abbott wasn't coming off an injury. He was just unranked.
Yeah, no, he was so inconsistent. And all of a sudden now he's starting to show flashes of what he did in the midsummer of last year. So encouraged by that.
You're also encouraged by Brady Singer and Tristan McKenzie, who are up 15 spots. Tristan McKenzie somehow is the guy who, it came out that he had a tear in his elbow, and then he decided he just started pitching better.
He even had a good start tonight, believe it or not. Yeah. Five innings, six Ks, one run against Detroit. Like,
and that was all. Like, I was looking again. We were recording now, so I didn't have a chance to watch it. But in looking at the Statcast data, it's the secondaries. The secondaries, yeah. You know, really came to play today. And that's kind of always been a thing for him, though. Was like he's able to. He never had a great four seam fastball.
Mm-hmm.
But the secondaries helped. The velocity on the four seam got really bad. It's still not great, but I was ready to cut bait when I was like, he's not looking good and he has a tear in his elbow. Like, what are we doing here? But I think now, like, I don't know how long it lasts, right? It could at any moment go sideways.
It looks so bad.
It looks, I mean, a sub 50% striker in both the slider and curveball tonight from Tristan McKenzie. And four seamers like right down the pipe.
Yeah, there's nothing about this that makes me confident in him, but also like nobody's gonna trade you anything for him,
right?
And he's pitching well enough that you can't just flat out cut him like I would have wanted to do when I found out he was pitching through a tear in his elbow. And I think he's just kind of like a forced, you know, Scott Pianowski, who I do the Roto World show with, calls it a forced hold.
Yeah,
I think it's a forced hold.
Yeah, well, he gets the White Sox next, so fine.
Well, that helps. Yeah.
That certainly does. Tristan McKenzie, this is something I realized is like, you feel obligated at times. Like, well, I'm not allowed to. He's pitching so well. Like, no, you can. You can just do that. You know, it's all right. I think we have such a negative perception of being seen as the fool that we don't make moves that we should a lot. I'm not saying you should drop Tristan McKenzie, but let's say he went against the, I don't know, the Jays next. Would you drop him?
No, because I don't believe in the Jays offense.
Okay, fine. Let's just say then the Phillies.
Would I drop him? I would certainly would not start him. So it would depend on how good the rest of my rotation was and if I could just eat a bench start.
Yeah, this thing is like a 12-teamer. I have him at 70, Tristan McKenzie. So like that's pretty much saying... this is the way I do it. The reason I called that tier 8 as like the book, right? The nook in the book. And that is because like after this, don't feel as if you need to really hold on to them. Actually, streamer is oftentimes best. So if it's not a good start for any guy after like tier 9 or tier 10 moving forward, yeah, you might want to just stream something else. Mm-hmm. Those are not things that I think, oh my gosh, I can't believe I dropped this guy. Like Taj Bradley's at 65. He's unranked. And because he's coming back from injury this week, I don't know how good he's going to be because he's been a command guy all of his career, right? It's been, can he do this? Can he do it? I don't know. Is Andrew Abbott going to have this run now? I don't know. I don't think that any of these are really going to be so absurdly good. Maybe Eric Cabrera. He hasn't had his command over the last two starts now, but he had a really good first start and now he gets the Dodgers and it's probably not going to be good. And if you don't want to hold on to Eric Cabrera for that one, yeah, that's fine. That's where I'm at with all of this. And Tristan McKenzie, we don't expect this to actually last. If you want to Vargas rule it, go ahead. And that means, of course, you just hold on to him until he blows up and then you get rid of it and you move on. But 15 teamers, I understand that you can't. 12 teamers, I think there are so many streamable options out there. I mean, all of tier 12, that's 83 through 100, are just streaming options.
Yeah.
And it's really nice that I can do that this year.
Including somebody who I did stream and pretty happy about it.
All right, we'll get to that soon.
We'll get to that in a second. Yeah, and then Brendan Faught, like, you know, a buddy of mine picked him up after his 11 strikeout start and was like, tell me there's something different about Faught. And I was like, no, actually. And not only no, but actually he's been worse against lefties this year than he was.
Oh, is that right?
Last year, yeah.
Oh, man.
And then obviously, like, the unearned runs of the last start make his start a little more palatable because it wasn't 5 earned runs. It was just 3 earned runs, but it was not a great start. And I just think like, yes, he's not any different.
Right now, Brady Singer is kind of interesting. I looked into this because I always get these comments about like people thinking, saying like, I hate this person or I'm super biased against them. And I go, okay, all right, let's just, like, there's no data to point to from them, but like, fine, I'm going to take another look at them just to make sure. And with Brady Singer, at the very least, like, at 68, I'm not really saying that he is actually that different. I'm going to I'm going to share that his sinker is more arm side than he used to be on both righties and lefties, which is good because that means instead of just reliant on called strikes away, he's actually jamming right-handers more effectively. That's not bad. I actually think that's a good thing for Brady Singer. He's getting more O-swing than he ever has. Is that enough to say, like, oh, cool, he's still sinker slider and now he's just demonstrably better than he has been the past 3 years? No. Like, he's had really good stretches. I actually remember in the middle of last year where it was about a month or so that Brady Singer was just hooking. And now, you know, he's going through a decent stretch at the moment, but this does not mean that Brady Singer is something different because he's still pretty much slider sinker. Like, four seamer shows up like 10 times a game, maybe sometimes like five. It's still the same guy for the most part. I don't think that this tweak is everything, but look, you go up to 68. Great. It's plus 15, but that doesn't really matter at this point.
Yeah. The guy I streamed is not in the next tier either. So it starts with number 71, Gavin Stone. Number 72, Luis Gil. Number 73, Spencer Arrighetti. Number 74, Jack Leiter. Number 75, Jose Soriano. Number 76, Tobias Myers. And number 77, Mason Black. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
So this is the tier of the Spice Girls. So this is going to be playing the boombox really loudly. Yes, I just said boombox. But this is just like singing along to songs, and you could feel really great about all this stuff, be really into it, but also look really stupid.
Okay, fair. Yeah. I guess the only guy like I really am curious about in this tier, I mean, Jack Leiter, he's getting a spot start against the A's, you know, whatever.
We maybe really he sticks know. Around, he could be taking Evaldi's spot. We'll yeah. see.
Spencer Arrighetti, you and Eno had a really good conversation about him on The Craft. I would encourage everybody to listen to that episode because you guys had differing opinions on him. And I think that always leads to like really good discussion and trying to compare things. Yeah. I'm curious about Luis Gil because I know that you like him. Like we've talked about this a lot in terms of like, when he's like, you mentioned to me, I think it was like off air too. Like when he's good, like you said, why would you bench him against the Orioles? Like if he's on your team, why would you not just start him against the Orioles? And he looked good.
Yeah.
And so I look at like the guys above him, like in, you know, 10, 15 spots even above him. And it's like his raw stuff, like his ability is far superior to a lot of these other guys. I'm curious, like, is it just the command where you're like, I just at this point, like, don't know how to trust him.
You know, what's kind of crazy. Luis Gil right now across 31 innings has two wins, so that's nice. 3.19 ERA, 1.19 WHIP with a 31% K rate. That's like, wait, I thought it would be a lot worse than that. I don't know if you guys know this about me. I don't actually look at ERA and WHIP in season. I know that sounds crazy. I'm a pitching analyst. I gotta like know like the result. I know the pitches. I know what they do. And a lot of times ERA and WHIP doesn't actually speak to the skills of a player, so I just don't let that overcome. Right? I don't let that make me feel one way or the other.
Right,
I'm really surprised to see that because honestly, it's just been two games above two runs. I mean, four of his starts have been two runs or fewer, which is absolutely shocking. I think he's walked every number between one and five at this point. Or sorry, one and seven at this point. Luis Gil is someone that has a really excellent four-seamer if he throws it for strikes. And the strike rate has been back and forth. It's at 62% now. In the spring, the changeup was this new addition on top of the slider that thought, oh my gosh, he's throwing a ton of those strikes, and that's going to be a major thing. 57% strike rate and 55% strike rate for Luis Gil's slider. So that's the biggest question is just, are you going to throw enough strikes? And what did he do against the Orioles? What do you know? 68% strikes in the four-seamer, but about 50% on both the changeup and the slider. The previous one, though, against the Brewers, it was an 80% strike rate on his changeup, 63%. On his four-seamer, and it didn't go well, but at least that was starting to be encouraging of like, look, you actually are maybe going to the zone. And that amazing game with nine strikeouts against the Rays, guess what? 71% strike rate on the four-seamer, 71% on the slider. So that's kind of how I see Gil is, are you going to be able to throw enough strikes? Kind of like Edward Cabrera in this way. I don't know. I don't know if you will, and I don't know how long the Yankees are going to really let him battle this is also another question I have for the full season. because I mean they're gonna have Will Warren come up or some, or anyone else really that they want clean beater. Sure, why not? And if Luis Gil is walking 15% batters still, yeah, that's not necessarily something they want to hold on to. Even with if the ratios are working out. So I hope it shows up. I think he's been better the last three starts than he was previously with his strike rate.
And which is to be expected with a guy, you know, transitioning into being a full-time starter in the in a rotation, you know.
Right. And he's, and look, his 4.9 hit per nine is not going to stick around. Right. That's just that's silly. Not going to stick around, but I'm looking forward to seeing how he develops.
Yeah. Mason Black obviously started today. I didn't get a chance to watch the start yet. I'm going to go back and take a look at it. From the StatCast page, it seems pretty similar to what I was reading in a lot of the profiles on him, which are like, there might not be enough of a swing and miss pitch to make him a reliable starter. He had just a 16% whiff rate, two whiffs on 12 swings on the sweeper. You know, nothing stands out. Tough test against the Phillies too,
though. Yeah, right. It's the first start of the year against the Phillies, and at the very least, he's going to get the Reds on the road in San Francisco next. That's pretty much where I was ranking him with this. I generally don't like doing MLB debuts. I did rank Christian Scott's well because it was the Rays and Scott looked so good. I'll probably rate his Skeens as well. But Mason Black, this wasn't expected to be good. Now, it's a four-seamer that he tries to go upstairs. It's actually relatively flat, but it doesn't really have the best vert and all. It's at like 92. And he does have a nice sweeper. I think it's a really, it's a solid one. It's going to do lots of good things for him. He tries to do it against lefties effectively. It's better against lefties than what I normally seen. It's more two plane, like an actual slider, really, or a slurve, whatever you want to say there. And I hate that word so much. It does look like he has enough to go against righties at the moment. And that could be enough against the Reds. Mm-hmm. Now, I have a dream that with his arm angle and everything that he just talks to Logan Webb and says, just what is the grip? Just tell me what the grip is.
Yeah.
And he all of a sudden has Logan Webb's changeup. And that would all of a sudden turn Mason Black into something legitimate.
Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed. Moving to tier number 11. Starts number 78, Andrew Heaney. Number 79, Griffin Canning. Number 80, Reed Detmers. Number 81, Mitch Keller. Number 82, Kyle Harrison. What's this tier called and why is it called that?
This one is you just holding onto the umbrella the entire day, not knowing if it's going to rain or not. And then when you get home, you're so upset that it didn't rain and you held onto your umbrella as you hear the crack of thunder and realize you just got home in time.
That was poetry. Like I could visualize that whole thing. You know what I mean? Like I felt
pain of just like, I'm holding on to a stool umbrella. Yeah. I got to bring it everywhere. I'm going to like a bar or something. I got to put it on my feet somewhere. And then you got to forget it.
I always tell my wife when I sit down, don't let me forget this. I'm going to forget this.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, this is the hipster tier a lot. Like these are some of the guys like Reed Detmers, Mitch Keller, Kyle Harrison are guys that you're holding on to that you really don't want to anymore. But then the second that you don't need it, it does the thing.
Yeah. Is there anybody in here you really want to talk about? I mean, I feel like we've covered a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
People know who they are at this point. Detmers is down a lot. The fastball.
I can do this quickly. Andrew Heaney, Blake Snell, Blueprint last three starts, and he has a good matchup this week. Actually, has two of them. This is kind of the most I've been on Andrew Heaney in a long time, because he actually is locating well at this point, and maybe there is something to that with a good winning team with the Texas Rangers. It's at Oakland and it's at Coors, and I'm not worried about that Coors start. Griffin Canning is avoiding the heart of the plate with his four-seamer, and he's nibbling a lot, kind of like a neck beard, with three secondaries, changeup, which just looks really good, slider and curve. So I kind of like Griffin Canning for a moment all of a sudden. I know I was way out early on.
Oh, you were way out.
Way out, and it's really at this point, too, tier 11 and tier 12, I know what the schedules are because I have it inside of my lovely list sheet that I use and show on stream, and he gets the Royals and that's cool, and then he gets the Cardinals, so like, all right, that I'm cool with that. Reed Detmers command is not there, and this is the biggest worry I had with Reed Detmers, was that I didn't know if he would have the command of most of his arsenal, and he hasn't, and this is the results, and this is not it. So I'm a little disappointed in that and hope it comes back. Mitch Keller, you guys know he's just the poster boy for cherry bomb, and guess what, he did well tonight. Okay, great, awesome, hope he can do well again.
A lot of whiffs, like, yeah, he does. And well then, like there's no whiffs.
Yeah. Kyle Harrison also is, it's a weird fastball. He's actually locating it better in the zone more this year, which is, I think, a big worry that we had last year. But it doesn't invert. It's very much of a low angle that is, he's trying to do this effectively. And the changeup and curve sometimes work, sometimes don't. And it's just something I think we're going to be lost as a hipster, headache-inducing pitcher stifling the entire roster, the entire year. You're going to be holding on to this one for too long.
Yeah. You know how I like is the guy who starts tier 12.
Do you really?
Number 83. I mean, relatively
okay, Nick.
Relatively speaking. Number 83, Ben Lively. Number 84, Logan Allen. Number 85, Zach Littell. Number 86, John Gray. Number 87, Tyler Anderson. Number 88, Martin Perez. Number 89, Charlie Morton. Number 90, Jose Budo. Number 91, Sean Manaea. Number 92, Dean Kremer. Number 93, Eric Fetty. Number 94, Patrick Sandoval. Number 95, Kyle Gibson. Number 96, Paul Blackburn. Number 97, Cole Irvin. Number 98, Hayden Wesneski. Number 99, Taewon Walker. And number 100, Carlos Carrasco. What's the tier called? Why is it called that?
You made it. You did it. 12 for 12. Eric Samulski, everybody. Applause. In a
row. 3 weeks in a row.
This is the homework tier. When it's a rainy day, you got to get your work done and you're going to take advantage of it. And it's, you know, you'll feel better later on and you just look at it and be like, all right, let's just get this done. Because these are all streamers. These are all like one and done and let's move on.
Will you feel better later on? Yeah, I guess you'll feel better later on.
Yeah, just be like, just don't think about it. Just to be like, cool, I'll take a streaming. I got to emphasize this. This is a new thing this year because I have all the schedules of this. Like before, it would take too long for me to go through what I thought were like a streamer and actually really understand their schedules. But tier 12 every week is the end of the list. It's just like, look, these are the ones that I would trust this week for a stream, for a single start. And I can actually pick and choose really effectively. So all of these guys have some sort of matchup that's like, all right, this is cool.
Yeah. I mentioned liking Ben Lively. I do in a relative sense. Like, I think he's on a decent stretch right now. And I like him in the sense that I think he firmly believes belongs as a streamer. Not like he's somebody you're going to hold on your roster, but like we never really thought about Ben Lively, right? Like,
yeah, true.
He wasn't able to stick. He went to Korea. He came back as a reliever. The Guardians signed him to be like a swing man. And then all of a sudden he's in the rotation and I'm digging into his arsenal and I'm like, oh, okay. So you added a slider in Korea. Okay, cool. Oh, you took that slider. You made it a sweeper before this year. And then you took the cutter that sucked, that wasn't any good, and you turned that into like a hard slider. So now you're throwing a slider and a sweeper. And it's like, okay, and that's working. The cutter was the worst of those three pitches by, you know, grades and performance, and so he got rid of it. You know, there are some issues here where it's like, you know, he throws the sweeper in the zone a lot, but it doesn't miss a lot of bats. So it's like, okay, it's a called strike pitch, kind of. You know, I have a little bit of a Bibee concern here, and then maybe it's like organizational, right? Like he has a 32% middle location, or before his last start, when I covered him for my Mixing It Up article, he had a 32% middle location on the sweeper. Like he's not getting the sweeper low. Hard slider is missing bats, but he's throwing that pitch early in the count really often. So it's like, okay, I'm not entirely sure. Like, how are you missing bats to righties if you're a sweeper and slider early in the count and you're not, you know, using it to put away hitters? And it's like, well, he's not missing bats against righties is the answer.
Yeah.
You know, also like he now has more, he has decent extension on his fastball and now has 15.1 inches of IBB, or he did again prior to his last start when I wrote the article, and like that's an improvement for him. So I just think his arsenal, I believe, is good enough now that he is firmly on the streaming radar, and I think that's huge for a guy who none of us even would have thought twice about coming into the year.
You know, Ben Lively throws 90 on his four seamer.
Yeah, it's like, but so he's Tristan McKenzie.
He's 1.2 flat, so it's flat above average. 7.1 extension, 90th percentile. And that's what he does, is he throws high four seamers, flat ones with tons of extension, kind of like Bailey Ober in this way. But the thing is, his four seamer isn't the good, like the great performer here. That is a 45% ICR. It's the high sinker, which has 10 more points of strike rate, almost 70% versus like the near 60% of his four seamer, 38% ICR, and yet a 12% mistake rate, which is really high. Oh no. So the way I see this is Ben Lively has been throwing upstairs and getting away with it in the way that Ian Osaris has been wanting everyone to throw high four seamers and high fastballs overall. His last start against the Angels was really bad. To me, I mean, I remember watching this and being like, he's throwing this stuff like right down the middle and getting away with it. I'm pretty scared about Ben Lively right now. I feel the what he's done is, I don't know, he's gotten away with that. And it's like, okay, this isn't going to really stick.
Yeah,
but I don't know. He gets a good matchup this week,
and right? he has, and you're running it out there because he's getting good matchups, and I think that's when I say I'm interested in him. Relatively speaking, is just like I'm not starting him against really good teams, but I understand the changes he made, and I'm like, I don't know that there's a lot of luck, there's a lot of pitches getting hit hard, but at the same time, like there's a, if you squint and see a little bit of a change in approach and, you know, how, where he's locating the sweeper, when he's throwing the slider and counts, like there's a possibility that he remains a streamer for the better part of the year. Not that he emerges as a guy you have to roster, but I've added him a few places and it's worked out well.
Yeah. I mean, it's Chicago White Sox next, and then it's the Rangers. And I honestly think that's like, all right, one last swan song against the Rangers for Ben Lively.
Sure. And I'm realizing that the player I streamed for this week didn't even make your top 100.
And who was that?
Simeon Woods Richardson, who just carved up the Seattle Mariners.
I didn't like what I saw in that second start at all.
I agree with you, and I don't want to like belabor the point on a guy you don't have rostered too much or you don't have on the top 100. Is like, to me, it was a lot about the offenses he's facing. I don't think the Mariners and Blue Jays are swinging it real well right now. Mm-hmm. Yep. I do think his fastball, Simeon Woods Richardson's fastball is better this year than it was last year
when he took away
some of the cut. The slider missed bats today. Like that's nice. The slider was he has made changes to the slider as well, coming into this year. And so it's like, okay, you're tweaking your arsenal. It's better. I don't know that you're going to recapture that like prospect pedigree that saw you get dealt multiple times in like deals for, you know, notable veterans. But I also trust the Twins pitching development. And so like, you know, he's making improvements and maybe he's somebody who can stick in a way that Louis Varland was not able to.
The command was much better today. Four seamer was much better up in arm side. You have changeups as well, down and arm side, slider staying glove side, curveballs for strikes. Much better performance today from Simeon Woods Richardson.
Yeah. And people need to put some respect on the name of number 92, Dean Kramer.
Three good starts in a row. Two of them came with a lot of fastball, four-seamer and cutter whiffs. The one in between was kind of weird. But he's pitching for a winning club, and it's Arizona Diamondbacks, and okay. The real interesting one, though, is Carlos Carrasco. He's throwing like 2 to 3 ticks harder now and had a 70% swing strike rate on his secondaries. I was like, whoa, I just want to give him some love for that. He has a pretty good matchup this week. If I remember correctly, it is the White Sox for Carlos Carrasco, throwing 93 now instead of 90. But yeah, what do you want to say about Dean Kramer?
Nothing. I mean, nothing that you didn't add. Just like,
all right.
You know, he made changes to the pitch mix in the second half of last year. He had a really good second half of last year. And I think that he was considered an afterthought and was considered an easy pitcher to replace when they went and got an arm. And so I think that he gets written off a lot. And all the arguments you made are like, yes, he pitches on a winning team and pitches, you know, in Baltimore and all that stuff that worked for John Means. But also, like, he's probably a little better than the narrative on him is. Mm-hmm. And so you add in the really good context with the fact that he's probably a slightly better pitcher than we think. And I would even go so far as to say, like, if you're in a deeper format, I know we do 12s primarily.
Yep.
How you and I operate. So like he is a streamer, but in like a 15 team league, I think he remains on rosters and maybe you don't start him every time out, but I think he's earned the right to be, he is reliable enough that he's earned the right to be on rosters in deep leagues and you just pick your times to put him in your lineup.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's going to do it, Eric. Oh my gosh.
We did it finally, guys. We did it. Sorry, lots to talk about, but we got through it. Hopefully you guys found it interesting. As a reminder, rate and review that when you can. I've got my Mixing It Up article coming out on Wednesday at NBC Sports, and you can read about some of these pitchers here. And Nick's got all the goodness always over at Pitcher List.
Always. Absolutely. And Eric, you know, Jalen Brunson, he's going to do it. I feel good.
I don't know. It's not looking good right now, but we're going to go watch the fourth quarter and, or at least I will. And we'll see if we can turn the magic around.
There we go.
So I am Eric Smolski, the Pelican.
I'm Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I'm going to put on my boombox and watch the Knicks.